Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planning leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
In the Dallas area, great church. Our pastor is Steve Stroop. I encourage you to check him out. He's got a couple of sessions tomorrow on the main stage. He's got one at 8:45. Don't miss it. And then he's got one in the afternoon. So Lake Point Church, 35 years old. Steve's first pastor.
You're 35.
I'm 35. So Steve's Lake Point started 35 years ago. We've had one pastor. It's a multi-campus church that's doing a tremendous job, I think, of reaching people in our area. And we've also been involved in church planning for the last 12 years. I've been on staff 11 years, and Steve pays me to keep my focus outside of our church so I don't mess anything up. So I work with church planners, which I really love to do. And one of the things, one of my only skills is identifying the skills of others. And so I asked two guys to be here today who are much more knowledgeable than I am about anything. So I want to introduce you guys to Andy Wood and Ben Pilgreen, and you guys introduce yourselves and we'll get going.
Cool. My name's Andy Wood. I'm a part of a church plant called South Bay Church. It's in Silicon Valley. We have two locations. One is in San Jose. The other is in Sunnyvale. My wife, Stacy, and I have three children. They are 9 years old, 6 years old, and 23 months going on 13. I have a little baby girl and two older boys. And we moved to the Bay Area in 2008 with two other families to start South Bay Church. So it'll be 7 years. We'll celebrate 7 years in February of 2016. So in church planting years, it's kind of like doggy years, right? So you're like 49 years of ministry for 7 years of church planting. That's what they say.
Sounds right.
So nice to meet you guys.
My name is Ben Pilgreen, and I was part of a team that planted Epic Church in downtown San Francisco, right there on Market Street is where we're located. We will turn 5 years old in February. My wife and I have three biological sons. They'll be 8, 10, and 12 this fall, and we brought a little girl home from India who's 9 about 100 days ago. So life is full. The city presents a lot of fun, a lot of unique challenges, lots of great food. And these two guys, this is a true story. I don't know if they were just sort of flattering. Rick was flattering us, but these guys have helped me as much as any two people, especially if you throw in the lead pastor from Lake Point, Steve Stroop. They've helped me as much as anyone in terms of planning our church. Andy went 2 years before us, so my doggy years aren't quite 7 per church planning year. He's helped me avoid a lot of things, and it's been great for us to be in the Bay Area together. So grateful to be here with these guys and you all.
In Lake Point, if you guys don't know, this is one of the hidden gems of church leadership in our country. And Steve Stroop is one of the greatest leaders that you will ever get around. His experience, his wisdom, and this is a phenomenally generous church that has made a huge impact on our lives. We wouldn't be where we are as a church without Rick, without Steve, and Lake Point Church. So it's good for us to be able to do this together.
Yeah, and I will say, and those of you who in the room are already on this endeavor of finding a church, probably the hardest job that you could ever do. And if there's any doubt in your heart that God can, I say plant a church if there's no way to get out of it. Mm-hmm. Like if I feel like if God will not let you get out of it, then you have to do it. Otherwise, I'd figure out another way to be utilized in the kingdom with your gift set, because I do think it takes a unique individual to start and plant a church in an area that's in desperate need of churches.
Absolutely.
And so our goal as a church has not been to be on a race to figure out how many churches we could start, but was to plant as many healthy churches as we could in areas that are most spiritually under-resourced. So we've worked with guys in San Jose and Silicon Valley and Boston, D.C., Denver, New York, Ernest Smith over here. Raise your hand, Ernest, is one of the guys we worked with, and he's just done an amazing job. And so we recently got the privilege of planting our 25th church in the last decade, and Fun fact that Steve, let me rob this from Steve, but our attendance, I'll just say this, our attendance on a weekend at Lake Point, at any one of our campuses, is about 15,000. And on the same weekend, in the 25 churches that we've started, that attendance is about the same. And so we want to start really healthy churches with the right kind of leader, with the right kind of resources, so that they can make a difference in the area that they're in, and new churches can be started. And so today, this talk of momentum, I think, is great to kind of lead into that.
Awesome. So cool. So we're going to talk specifically about the subject of momentum. You can think about momentum from a lot of different angles. You could think about momentum from the angle of a train. That's the initial momentum equals, what is it, mass times velocity. You can think of momentum like a snowball that gets going and it has more power the bigger it gets as it rolls down a hill. And then you can even think of momentum from a standpoint of businesses and organizations. So you can look at companies like Apple that now have $200 billion in cash on hand. That's just hard, cold cash in their bank account that they have. And when they release a product now, they'll have people waiting outside buildings for days camping to get a new phone that's released. And there's a lot to be said about when a business, an organization, a church, a team, any group of people has momentum, you're able to overcome barriers that oftentimes other organizations get stuck at for years. And it's kind of like you're going down the road in traffic, and sometimes you're stuck. You know how, I don't know what your area is like, but we have these HOV lanes, and if you get the sticker on your car, you can go in the HOV lane. And you look at somebody who's like one lane over from you, and they're going 90 miles an hour, and you're stuck in traffic. That person has momentum. And sometimes in ministry, it can feel like that. Like you're stuck in traffic, and you're not making much progress. But there really are some practical spiritual decisions that we can make in cooperation with God to move towards greater momentum. And we don't get to choose what that momentum is. We don't get to choose how much it is. That's really up to God. John chapter 3, when John the Baptist is speaking and the disciples are leaving Jesus to leaving John the Baptist to go to Jesus, John the Baptist says, a man can only receive what's given to him from heaven. So we know God grows his church, God builds his kingdom, we get to participate and be a part, but we want to learn our role in cooperation with the Holy Spirit in building God's church to harness the momentum that really is already in existence here on planet Earth. So that's what this session is about. We're going to give you three major assumptions to build our time together on. This is the way we think about momentum. These are some of the foundations before we get really practical. Am I going too fast?
No, we're just thinking about scooting over.
No. Come on, man. All right, so the first major assumption is this. It's more about building, about God building his kingdom than me building my church. It's more about, momentum is more about God building his kingdom than me building my church. You want to talk about this a little bit?
No.
Go ahead, man. Take some.
Go ahead, Ben.
Just elaborate on Andy's?
Yeah, just elaborate on that.
Yeah, I do think at the end of the day, there's some things we've got to recognize about ourselves, and sometimes it feels like they're on polar opposites. So this idea of confidence and humility is a lot of what I think about in terms of whose kingdom am I building, and I think you should strive. I am striving. One of my great prayers over the last couple of years has been that God would give me an equal measure of humility because of who I am in light of who God is, but also confidence because of who God is and because of who God is in me. If you're interested in building your own kingdom, you know, it's like producing a B-level movie. Like, you can be the star, it's just not going to be worth much. And, you know, I can remember John Ortberg one time taught out of Esther on this whole idea of a shadow mission, and it's just, you know, you really need to be gut-level honest with yourself about what the mission is that you are most interested in. And you can't, because remember, God can't transform the you pretend to be. He can only transform the real you. And when it comes to our calling, if we're in it for our mission, for our kingdom, for our little C church, more than the greater kingdom of what God's up to in the world, something is off. We've all been in that place, okay? We go back and forth. We forget who it's about. We forget what it's about. I think a few ways you can know that it's all about your kingdom is do you feel a pressure to to produce what only you really know deep down only God can produce. I know for me, sometimes I feel that pressure. Like, oh, I don't have what it takes. But God never called me to have what it takes. I have the gospel. The gospel has what it takes, and I need to be able to get out of the way. I want to do my best. I talk a lot to our church about my part, our part, and God's part. In the story God's writing of your life, God's got the big part, okay? You are not the leading actor or actress. God's got the big part, but he's calling you to play a part of faithfulness, of dependence, and I think our heart has to expand for the kingdom. So ask yourself this question: if God wants to move in my city and he chooses to use a church besides my church, am I okay with that?
Yeah.
I think it's important. That's good.
Yeah, and that point that it's more about building God's kingdom than my church. I think about like Lake Point, and I shared with you a little bit about the size of Lake Point and the number of people who are reaching it, and it's really made a difference in our community. But up until 1996, so I guess the first 15 years that Lake Point was in our area, the goal, I mean, we had this very specific vision. It was like to reach share Christ and build believers with the people in the Lake Ray Hubbard community, you know, and that was it. And Steve got a chance to, I mean, God just like opened his eyes to this, to the world, really. And in 96, you know, that vision just kind of got broadened to more than our pond. And, you know, his was one of his first trips to go, you know, and went to China and, you know, just had an impacting experience and said, hey, look, this is, our vision's too small. You know, there's this great need in the world. And I would tell you that, you know, from that point on, our growth seemed to be much more substantial locally, but it was also about that influence that we had and the impact that we were getting to be a part of that was part of God's larger picture, mm-hmm. You know.
And I think it's interesting. We know this is true as leaders, like with people who come to our church. Like we always talk about, okay, part of discipleship, part of growth is going from being a consumer to a contributor. But sometimes we're preaching that to our people, but we're not leading that way as a church. And God has historically, if you go back 2,000 years, you can look and you can see how Jesus has been building his church and his kingdom for 2,000 years. But there are a whole lot of local churches along the way that weren't experiencing momentum. So the question I want to ask is, how do I position, with dependency upon the Lord, how do I position our church underneath the movement of God's kingdom that is already existing so that I don't have to stir up momentum on my own power, but based upon what is already there and what God is doing? He wants to build his kingdom. He wants to build his church. He wants to reach lost people way more than you and I can ever fathom. But when our effort is so focused on our domain, we take God's hand off of what we're trying to do, and then we lose momentum as a result of it. So that's number one. Number two is, it's more about removing barriers than forcing a strategy. It's more about removing barriers than forcing something to happen. And, you know, churches that experience sustained momentum over the course of time, they get the blessing of God upon their lives, their churches, and then the leadership of that church, their role then becomes to say, okay, how do I look into the future to realize the barriers that are going to come? If God, like, think about it like this. If God decides supernaturally to show up in your community this week and give dreams to 100 people that they need to come to your church or your launch team next week, are we going to be prepared for those 100 people? And so we want to look at, and we say, how do we remove barriers? Later on in the time, we're going to talk more specifically about that. And then I'll go to this third one, and then we'll get into specific practical side of this. But it's more about receiving God's favor than pushing with human effort. And that's really what we've been saying so far. It's looking to say, God grows his church. I want to be positioned to receive what it is that God is already choosing to do. Anything you guys want to add to the assumptions?
Yeah, I want to tack on to this last one about just, you know, putting yourself in a position to receive that favor. I think it's not only organizationally and what you're trying to do to grow your church, but personally as a leader, you know, that you don't get distracted yourself, and that you're ready to receive God's favor personally. Mm-hmm. You know, because we can get caught up in, and I'm telling you, my name is Rick, and I have a problem. You know, I mean, this is my area. I struggle with, like, you know, getting caught in the details, the things that, like, I know that need to happen, and you can get so caught up in stuff that you realize you're way out in front of where God is. Mm-hmm. And so.
Yeah, I think when you look at the calling that God's given to you and your capacity as a leader, there will always, 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 you can take it to the bank, there will always be a gap between your capacity and your calling. And the natural human tendency, my tendency, I'm with Rick, I'm Andy, I'm a workaholic. My human tendency is to try to fill that gap between capacity and calling with more effort. Mm-hmm. And that does not produce more fruit. What produces greater levels of fruit is trusting to realize that there is a gap in ministry that only God, only the Holy Spirit can fill. And when I'm dependent upon Him and my eyes are on Him, He's able to fill that gap.
All right, and I'm going to tack on this because there's absolutely this gap that exists, I think, often between calling and capacity, and it goes in cycles that this gap, you know, does this. But I'll say this, and I don't think God has called anybody where He hasn't gifted them. Okay, and so, I see this often, that there are people who there is this passion on them to be a part of planting churches, and because they may not know another avenue to let this passion or calling out, they assume that it is to be a lead pastor and lead guy and plant a church. I think if you get outside of your gifting, you're going to be in trouble, right? I mean, God has made you to do some certain things, and when you're doing those things, you thrive. You know, He blesses it. You know, you got this energy, and you can go all day doing this thing. But if you're outside of that, even if you're doing something that's a good thing, you know, it's going to drain the heck out of you, and you may or may not be as effective in it as you would be in another area. So yeah. I just say don't mistake a calling to be a part of a church plant for a calling to be a church, to be the church plant, the lead church planter.
And I'll just say on this whole more about receiving God's favor than about human effort, I'm going to have three trains of thought that I think go together. The first thing is just don't fool ourselves. Again, we know that not only is God not cool with pride, He opposes pride. Okay, so like He opposes pride, so like, oh man, I don't need to be prideful, so I should lack confidence. No, I think God blesses confidence. It's just confidence in what? It should be confidence in God's power, confidence in God's call. And so then it's like, oh, it's all about God. I'm just going to be inactive. No, God, all those things work together. You don't need to be prideful about it. You need to be confident. Your confidence doesn't need to be misplaced, but you need to be willing to work your tail off, as Paul would say, with the strength the Lord gives. So it's still all about Him. I think I meet too many people that are prideful or just lack confidence completely, or they go inactive because they've come to the conclusion that God's going to do everything. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fine, delicate theme, but I think those things are important. So I don't want to be prideful, but I want to be confident. It's not on my human effort, but there's going to be effort required. I can't find anywhere in the scripture where someone didn't have to walk around a city seven times or go to Pharaoh or step your foot in the water. Yeah, there's got to be your... And part of what we do is our obedience, our faith in action, it activates or it unlocks the thing that God alone can do what He's going to do. But we activate some of His God-only moments, I think, in our lives, in our churches, in our cities.
That's great. All right, so what we wanted to do with that first part was we wanted to establish how we look at the subject of momentum. Because so much of leadership is the way you think, right? If you think the wrong way, you're going to do the wrong thing. And so oftentimes you can look at people, it's like back to that illustration of driving a car, right? Both people are driving a car. Both people have their hands on the wheel. Both people want to put their foot on the gas. they're doing the same thing, but they're in different lanes. And the way you see and the way you think about momentum really does change the fruitfulness, I think, of an entire church. So that's the starting point. We're going to get into the practical side of things now, okay? And walk through how do we align with God. So the first one is this. With momentum, we want to align our heart and our strategy with God. So you know how sometimes you have a book that the title of the book is way better than the book itself? You guys know what I'm talking about? Like, you got enough from the title of the book, you didn't even need to read it. So we have one of those. It's called The Trellis and the Vine. And the idea is that whenever you set up a trellis and a vine, you put out a trellis like this. The trellis is going to actually be the wrong color. It's supposed to be brown. But the trellis is green, and then you let a little vine loose, and then the vine, it's a black vine, vine from hell. Dark, but it grows along the trellis. And ministry is a lot like that in terms of the way that momentum happens. We'll put some pink flowers on it for all the people who like puffy artistic things. So here are some flowers that grew on the trellis. So we want to create the trellis on which ministry is happening in our hearts with the Spirit of God. And one of the questions we want to ask ourselves is, what is it that God already values? So we know without a shadow of a doubt, God is concerned about every single lost person in our community. That there is no person in the community that He has called you to. Remember back to Luke chapter 15, the Good Shepherd abandoned the 99 sheep to go after the one lost sheep. And so we can have confidence when we're looking at strategy, when we're dreaming, when we're putting together plans for momentum, that every person in the community, God wants their lives to be transformed with the gospel. So when we approach and we start to ask questions like, what is it that God already values? We've been doing this initiative right now with adoption. And it is unbelievable the momentum that we have around adoption. And it's like you share the idea with a couple churches to get support. You share it with the people, and there's immediate momentum. Well, that is supernatural because it's something that's already inside the heart of God. That when you start moving in that direction, you're not forcing it, and so you're aligning your heart with what it is that God already values. You know, some other things you can make your own list, but. Look at the ministry of Jesus and what He valued. He valued broken people. What else did Jesus value? Jesus valued children. Think about how everybody else in His society would push away children, but when children would come, Jesus would welcome them with embrace. So asking that question begins to shift our perspective in the way that we strategize for ministry so that we're not fighting against God, but we're working with Him. Proverbs chapter 21, verse 30 says, there's no wisdom, no insight, no plan that can succeed against the Lord. The horse is made ready for the day of battle, but victory rests with the Lord. So when we're working with God, we're going to have His blessing. There's one other thing I wanted to say before. One other thing around aligning your heart with God strategically. Part of being a leader is discerning where God is at work. And we kind of have this deal where sometimes we'll try something and we feel ourselves pushing to get it off the ground. And we're like, okay, are we having to push because we're just getting it rolling, or is it because it's not something that God is in? I'll give you an example of this. So when we started our church, we raised $1 million to launch a church. We had 220 people after the dust, you know, at our grand opening, dust settled. We successfully grew it down to about 125. But it took us almost 2 years to get to 250 people, or I should say about a year to get to 250 people. Well, you compare that to church online. And we put up online streaming, hooked into the internet, And within a couple of months of putting church online, we had 500 people watching church online with hardly any resource, any energy. So as a leader, I look at that and I say, okay, here's something that evidently there is already a ton of momentum around. So how do I align what we're doing to get behind what is already in existence? If you guys want to add something to this?
No.
Can we keep going?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So let's work on our thinking a little bit more. Uber. What was the other one I was saying earlier? Airbnb, Google. Right? Google.
Some great San Francisco companies.
Great Bay Area companies. They did not create a new industry. They harnessed an industry that was already existing. So people are already looking for hotels. People are already searching for, you guys all know what Uber is, right? Transportation. Yeah. So they took something that was already in existence where there was already momentum, and they created the platform that those people, now when you're traveling, you're thinking, okay, how do I get an Uber? When you're searching for a place to go, I don't know, our generation now does this. We travel, Airbnb it. Why are we gonna pay $300 for a hotel when we can do a staff retreat and get a lake house in Tahoe for $500 for the full week in the middle of October? And so our thinking has changed because they became that engine around looking for a hotel. So you are aligning it spiritually. You're aligning with something that's already in existence, where there are people every single week in your community that are searching spiritually, and with momentum. You're not forcing or creating something. You're creating the platform that when that person starts searching, like, I want to be, sorry for those of you guys who are in the Bay Area and wanting to plant churches, we want to be in the South Bay Area, Silicon Valley. We want to be the church that when somebody thinks my marriage is falling apart and I need help, we're immediately what comes to mind. So we're aligning our heart and our strategy with something that God has already done. All right.
Yeah, I was at Andy's church. I don't know, whenever the last time I was there. I see this woman who's serving, and she's working. She's really busy working at the hospitality area. She's straightening up. She's working with coffee. And so I go over and talk to her and say, like, how long have you been connected at South Bay? And she said, 2 months. And I said, that's awesome. And I said, well, how did you connect? And she goes, well, like 2 years ago, I got an invite for Easter. And I kept it. I just kind of threw it in the drawer next to my refrigerator. And she goes, just about 4 months ago, some things happened in my life that, you know, made me realize I needed, you know, to focus on my spiritual relationship with God. And she goes, I dumped the drawer out, and I found the card, and I came. You know, and so her life is, so it is, it is.
Yep. All right, number two is this. Focus all your energies on a few core strategies and initiatives. Focus all of your energies on a few things, okay? So how many of you guys are pre-launch right now? Just a show of hands, just out of curiosity. Okay, so like half the room. Okay, please listen to me intently for the next few moments. If you don't hear anything I say for the next few moments. Your church plant is, you are in the most crucial stage of your church plant. I'm speaking now with the assumption that God's called you as a church planter and wired you as a church planter. Rick already said that stuff about if you shouldn't be doing it. That's another conversation. But church planting is like a series of dominoes, okay? And if you're trying to push over, so here you are, and you look at it, just imagine these things are dominoes. I flunked art class, but you get the idea. You push over one domino, pushes over the next, that pushes over the next, that pushes over the next, that pushes over the next. Part of working wisely in momentum is knowing what domino to press over when. Because if you are pre-launch, and you are so focused on starting your soup kitchen ministry down here, when you don't even have the resources to be able to launch the church, you're going to get down here and not be able to do your soup kitchen ministry, because when you were right here, you didn't you didn't raise the support that you needed. So when you first start off in calling, the idea is to try to focus as much energy and attack your cell phone to attack what is most important right now to get the church off the ground. So before you can launch the church, you need a launch team. You need a location. Let's start backwards. Before you can launch the church, you need a location. Before you can get a location, you need to know, okay, what are the dates going to be that I'm going to plan my services? How many got previews, just out of curiosity? Okay, that's another conversation about momentum right there that harnesses momentum. Before you can do your previews, you need to know, okay, what part of town are you going to? You need a launch team. Before you do all that, you're going to need the resources to do that. Before you do that, you need to do your assessment. So there's this series of events that have to happen. And if you can focus your energy a little bit at a time. So I'm going to get really OCD on you. When we moved to the Bay Area, I was really overwhelmed by all the stuff that had to happen. So I broke everything down into 6-week chunks. And I said, okay, I know that in February of next year, if we don't have a church launch by that point, we're going to be in trouble. We're probably going to be packing bags, going back home. So I got to back myself up every 6 weeks to know what are the 6 most important things that need to happen in the next 6 weeks. And I'm going to give all my energy to that and push that domino down. And then I took those 6 weeks and I'm creeping some of you guys out now, but I took those 6 weeks and then I went week by week and I said, okay, this week I need to get these things done. And then I took that weekly list and I said, okay, today I need to get this accomplished. And we did the exact same thing with everybody that was on our team. And that allowed the momentum to be forward progressing. Add some to this.
Well, I think this is a unique combination of both the vision, so knowing where you want to go, but also breaking it down. And
right.
So you can do this 6-week chunk, and if you don't have a real clear vision, you could be, you know, going toward nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, or going toward the wrong direction. So it is this knowing where you want to go and then backing up and then beginning to do this thing.
Yeah, and part of it is knowing you do not, as a church plant, you don't have to be great at everything. And if you can take on a yoke that Jesus doesn't intend for you to carry. Now, I know there are lots of different models out there of how you do church and all that, but I really do think the weekend worship experience that we've seen, maybe your culture is different than ours, but we're in one of the most unchurched areas in the entire country, and people who are unchurched still look for church on Sundays, and they're making decisions when they come whether or not they're going to come back based on whether or not they had a good experience. Now, I don't know what the opposite of attractional is, and I know there's a lot of, you know, stuff about not being an attractional church, but I'm not really interested in being an ugly church or a dead church,
like anonymous.
Anonymous church, whatever you
repelling church.
Repelling church. But I want to create an experience that doesn't compromise the gospel, but when they come back the next week. I mean, just it's common sense, right? So you need to do a good, I think you need to do a good job with your weekend service. Secondly, if you are going to try to reach young families, you know, Scary Larry probably shouldn't be the guy at the door, right? With his, you know, with a really big mustache and
hands in his pockets.
This is not a banana. You know, like, we don't want that guy in there.
Yeah.
And then the outreach into the community of building those relationships, number 3. And then for us, we said, once we launched, we didn't focus on life groups until smaller groups until we launched, but once we did, and we just did those 4 things, and we worked those 4 things for the first 5 to 6 years of ministry and stayed simple, and it just allows your energy to go towards things that are really producing momentum. So, you know, again, if God's called you to do an adoption ministry, do an adoption ministry. If God's called you to do a soup kitchen, do a soup kitchen. All those things are really great. But the more focused you can be over the long haul, we're now 7 years in and we're doing that stuff. But we needed to get the church healthy so that there was enough strength to be able to do those things. Because if you don't get the church launched and get it healthy, you'll never be able to do any of that stuff in your community.
Give us your 4 things again.
Weekend worship experience. This is still our four stuff, our four things too. Weekend worship experience, our life groups, family ministry, and we call it global and local outreach. And so much falls under that. But one of our big things is we want to go with the momentum that's already in people's hearts, and we want to take what's in somebody's heart, and we want to help them figure out how they can harness those four streams to build whatever the dream is. So, like, we have some people who are really passionate about men's ministry, and we do all that through our life groups, but we don't give a lot of staff time to it, we don't give a lot of money to it financially, and we let it build itself through the stream that is already in existence. So when you have to build a new stream, it takes staff money, it takes energy, it takes conversations, it takes decisions. So you're trying to get everything that you can into those big rocks.
Big yes. rocks. Right. So you got the four big rocks. If you're trying to fit everything in this container, you got rock, sand, and gravel. The best way to make sure you make that happen is make sure your big rocks are taken care of first, right? You got your big rocks in place, then you add in your gravel that filters down in here, and then the sand kind of fills, and all these other things that you want to do aside from those four big things that he talked about are really not the big rocks. They're important. You've got to have, but you can fill those in as you progress. And I want to use my math formula here.
Yes, go for it.
Because, you know, we said that, let me jump over here. So we said, like, momentum is mass times velocity. And so this concept of velocity is different than speed, right? Speed could say that, like, you could be moving really fast and really busy and going in a ton of different directions. Right? You could be doing things in your community, you could be doing the soup kitchen, but you've got all these different areas you're trying to go, and that's speed. You could be doing a lot of activity. That's not what creates momentum. Momentum is velocity, which is like focused. It's speed in a specific direction, and that's what causes you to gain momentum, not this thing that keeps us going this way.
That's good.
Great. Let me add just something that's been helpful for me is I read a book about combining this concept of patience and urgency. It seems like two words that are opposed to each other, patience and urgency. And in church planning, I like to think about it as a 10,000-step journey. And here's where the patience and urgency come in. You've got to have patience to know that you can't build this thing overnight. You can't build it in the next 6 months. You can't build it in a year. But where urgency comes in is that I can do something today that's going towards those 10,000 steps. It's the idea of the 20-mile march, Jim Collins, and Great by Choice. So here's what happens. When you think about, oh, it's so overwhelming, one of two things that can happen and won't be any good. One is you think you've got to get it all done this week, and so you're not healthy, you go crazy, you have no margin. Or the other one is, oh, it's going to take us a long time to do it, I can put this off till next week. And so you're really holding those things in tension. Hey, you know what? I've got to be Epic can't become a church of 1,000 people in downtown San Francisco overnight, or maybe even over 5 years or 10 years. Who knows? But it can become that. And I can do something today, and I can do something tomorrow. I can't do it all, but I can do something tomorrow. And so the clarity on backing that thing up and not getting paralyzed. And sometimes what can happen, there's so much to do, you get paralyzed. You literally go a week and you don't do anything.
Yeah,
and another thing that these guys have helped me think through is the idea of having process goals rather than results-oriented goals.
Yep.
You know, I can't make 10 people come to Christ this week, but I can have 10 conversations at Starbucks or, wherever I happen to be hanging out.
That's good. All right, number three is this: discern and embrace unique seasons of life and ministry. Discern and embrace the unique seasons of life and ministry. So when you look at your community, every community is different. I know, like, Ernest is in Denver, Colorado. We're in the San Francisco Bay Area. And even from where Ben lives up in the city to where we are, there are natural ebbs and flow. There's a natural ebb and flow to the community. When people go on vacation, when are the times where people who are looking for church are going to look for church? And the best way, I think, to really figure this out is to look and see, are there any churches in your community that are really making an impact, and talk to them, learn from the flow of their ministry. And one of the best pieces of advice that I ever received on this is from a guy by the name of Bill Cornelius, who wrote a phenomenal book called Go Big. And he talks about how I was in a coaching network that he did, and he said, momentum in terms of a few core initiatives and around this idea of unique seasons, it's like the game Tug of War. You guys remember in Tug of War and you play? How many of you guys ever played Tug of War before in school? I don't think they let kids play Tug of War anymore.
It's too competitive. It's too,
yeah. They need helmets.
A winner and a loser.
They need helmets.
There's no upwards.
Yeah, you lose.
No.
But
they do in Texas.
Okay. Where their parents carry guns if it doesn't go well. So, but the way you win in tug of war is that you get everybody on the team to do what? It's to pull at the same time. Remember, so you should go 1, 2, 3, pull. 1, 2, 3, pull. And everybody pulls, and it gets everything moving in the same direction at the exact same time. So we do what we call big days, where before a big day, about 4 times a year, the week before, we're encouraging people to bring their friends the next week. We're teaching on relational evangelism. We're sending out all of our marketing. We're doing Facebook ads. We're doing all of that at the same time. Easter and Christmas are two, in our culture, I don't know about you, but Easter and Christmas, people who never go to church, go to church. I don't get it, but I guess they feel good for the rest of the year. If they get there those 2 days, we feel great about it. So we want to harness, like I've heard churches say, well, you know, we're going to go against the grain of culture and the way people are, and we're just going to do our launch day on Super Bowl Sunday, and we're going to skip, you know, Christmas. And like, I'm thinking, all right, you do that. I'll market to all those people in the community and get them to come to our church on that day, because there are like thousands of people in our community looking. So we're harnessing and embracing seasons that exist uniquely in our church and our ministry. And then there are downtimes, like, yes, the summer. You know, from like Mother's Day for us through mid-July, people travel, they're on vacation. So I'm not gonna put all my energies there when everybody else is at Tahoe. I want to be at Tahoe. I don't want to be pushing. We need breaks as well. So learning to discern and embrace those seasons, looking at momentum from a push and release on an annual basis. So there's times where you push, there's times where you release, there's times where you... And once you get into a flow over the course of a couple years, you can start to see what those seasons are and those times are going to be, and you're working with the rhythm of your community. The other thing about this is you, as a leader, learning your own unique season and stage of life, and learning to embrace that as well. A great book on this is a book by Bruce Miller called Your Life in Rhythm. So
incredible book. Yeah, I need to meet this guy. He's like a pastor in the Dallas area. I just need to go meet him. I've referred this book like thousands of times. And I think it applies to church planting. But if you find somebody who's struggling like in their season of life, it's a great book to tell them to read. And so what Bruce says is that in every season, there are unique things that can only be done in that season, right? And so you need to, he even gave like a surfing analogy, you know, like you need to ride the wave that you're on, because that's the only time you can do it, right? And so a lot of people will get stuck at looking at how things were and you know, look, I wish it was like that again. Or they'll look ahead and go, I can't wait until this happens, and they'll miss what they can do like right now. And if you have kids, and you can put this in the like in your kids' stage of life thing, like there are unique things even personally that you can only do with your kids.
Yep.
Like my grown daughters are not sitting on my lap anymore. I mean, they're not. And so like you got to figure out what it is that you can do in this season of your life personally and in your church.
Yep. That's good. We could talk about all of these for a really long period of time. We got two more. I want to just throw these out there. The fourth thing is eliminating bottlenecks that hinder momentum. So part of what I want to do as a leader is to say, okay, if God does bless our church, what are the problems that we're going to have? So we're gonna run out of space in rooms. We're gonna, eventually we're not going to have enough leaders. You know, these are the capacity type lids. And you look at a building, every community is different, but where we are, people drive the church. So we need enough parking when they come. We need enough kid space if they bring their kids. We need enough places for their butts to go. So as a leader, I want to remove those bottlenecks, believing and assuming that God's going to bless our church.
I want to brag on Andy just a minute. And I can remember being in his office. I don't remember where your office was. But this is maybe your first Easter. And our second. I can't remember. Second Easter. 600 Easter?
Something like that.
Yeah, so he's on his window, back like this window back here, that's his whiteboard in his office, and he's writing all these things that like he's, you know, praying for and asking God to do. And one of them was like, we are trusting and believing God that he will bring 600 people to our service on Easter. And here's what we're doing to prepare for God to do that. You know, it was like every area of his ministry. And so it's this unique combination of like praying for God to do what only God could do, but making sure that they're doing in preparation, they're doing everything they can do to believe that God's going to bless that. So you want to pray for 600 people to show up? Show God that you believe that by having the children's workers that you need in that room.
Yep.
And having the greeters that you need to greet those folks. I mean, it's this combination.
Yep.
Of cooperation.
Yeah, and I think over the long haul, the thing that we've seen is that the biggest bottlenecks eventually become leadership and having the right quality and quantity of leaders for an organization. That if you have the right leaders, you can overcome almost any, with God's help, you can overcome any challenge that you face if you have the right people on the team. And the wise leader is looking to say, okay, what can I do? And that's the fifth one, to solve future problems. So, this is a Steve Stroop quote. Great leaders see problems before anyone else sees them and solves them before anyone else knew that they existed. So, yep, great leaders see problems before anyone else sees them and solves them before anyone else knows about them. So, that's like the Sunday you move into a new building or a new campus and you looked in 2 years into the future and you knew if God kept blessing you and you're going to keep growing at a certain rate, and when you get there, if you don't have a facility, you're not going to keep reaching new people. And with God's help and his provision, you raise the money, you do the construction, and then you have that Sunday, and you just watch out the window as people pull onto the lot, and you go into the kids' spaces, and it works, and you go into the auditorium, and the band's playing, and the room temperature's the right temperature, and the technology doesn't always happen like that, but you go in, and nobody knew. It's like I'm walking on this campus today, and I'm just thinking to myself, I wonder how much personal sacrifice the lead pastor of this has gone through to build this incredible facility. And I think great leaders, we're all here sitting in the rooms enjoying a conference, but I'm sure he had thousands of one-on-one meetings and vision meetings and capital campaigns and all that he did in advance for something that everybody else. You remember that parable that Jesus gave about the kingdom of heaven? He said, the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed tree, or a tree that grows up and all the birds of the air come and perch on its branches. And I think wise leaders are creating those environments, and they're seeing into the future the challenges and problems that are going to be in existence in the future, and they're starting today to solve those problems so that when you get there, and then people just, they're like, oh wow, this is awesome. I can't believe we have this children's minister. I can't believe we have this facility. But you, between you and God, you know, you worked with him, you solved it in advance, and you get to watch the beautiful fruit that he produces as you cooperated to create that trellis that would provide the environment for him to move.
Good stuff.
Really good.
Hey guys, thanks for coming. We're gonna be back. We're gonna be in this room tomorrow at 8:45. I really want to encourage you to show up and bring somebody with you. We do not want to be in this room at 8:45 tomorrow alone.
Alone.
And we're gonna talk about landmines that have potential as a church planter and how to avoid those things. And I've asked Ben if he would just kind of pray a blessing on you guys as we leave today.
Yes. Father, I thank you for every story, every life, every family, every church, and future church that's represented in this room. God, we know that you are able to bring momentum even from what feels like it may be dead or stuck. And so, God, I pray you'd give these men and women vision. I pray that you would give them clarity. God, give them wisdom. God, I pray that they would be humble and yet very confident. God, I pray they would do everything you call them to do, but they would trust you to do everything that only you can do. God, and I pray there would be much fruit in the kingdom, even from an afternoon session here at Mariners Church for Exponential 2015. May it be so in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
You guys have a great afternoon.
Thanks, guys, for coming.
Thank you, guys.